Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
USDA says farmers in Iowa, despite dry weather conditions, will raise more corn per acre than those in Illinois. Can it be true? We'll find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Wyatt. He's the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NAS in Washington, D.C. Our panelists today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing from Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. USDA has released its August estimate of the corn and soybean crops in the United States. The corn crop is down a percentage point from last year, but still manages to be the third largest on record at 10.976 billion bushels, with an average yield of 152.2 bushels the acre. The soybeans harvested is estimated at 5% smaller than last year on the average yield of 39.6 bushels to the acre, totaling 2.93 billion bushels to put away this fall. Will a big crop get bigger? We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think you're talking two different things with corn and beans. I think if you're talking August 1st, there's been a lot of bushels added to the bean crop. I expect that probably to get bigger. With corn, it's anybody's guess. I think there's so much variability across the corn belt. You've got areas that I think maybe where it's bad, it could be worse, and there's places maybe where it's pretty good, it could get even better. I don't know, it could get bigger, but I don't expect any big changes in corn, maybe relatively speaking, to the beans, because I think the beans will only get bigger.
And Bill Mayer.
I think that you've got to go with the past history, and the past history tells you that 13 out of 20 years, I think it is, and 5 out of the last 5 years, the final number was bigger than the August number on corn, and I think that you've got to go with that. Beans, as we all are aware, is kind of a shot in the dark, and you know, when you're talking August 1st, and just about anything can happen on the beans.
And with you, Kurt Kimmel.
Well, I'm not quite sure the formula they're going to come up with on the current situation, but when you actually go out and pull back and check ears, we talk to guys all over the nation, and there's quite a bit of shrinkage or pullback. Normally you figure about a 1-inch pullback is optimum, but we're seeing cases of more than that. And I think the mentality is with kernel fill questionable and so forth that maybe the corn crop might be as large as it's going to be, whereas beans with these last rains, maybe they can grow a little bit.
Corn futures at the Chicago Board of Trade this week finished like this. September contract, a high this week of 243, the low at $2.24.5. Their September settled down 20 and a quarter from last Friday at $2.24.75. The Dees contract at 241.75 was off 20.5 cents for the week. Wheat futures September contract at 396 high, low at 373. September's off 22.25 this week at $3.73.75. July futures at 428.5 were down 21 cents. And the SEP oats to round out the grains at $1.77.5 were off 7 cents for the week. USDA says, Bill, that corn ending stocks this year will be 2.062 billion bushels. That's unchanged from July. That's for this marketing year. We've just 4 weeks left before the new marketing season begins, and it looks like corn exports could exceed the goal by a few tens of million bushels, maybe 40 million bushels. I think they've been running at about 50 million over the last 4 weeks. Given that, is there a reason to believe next year's carryout figure of 1.232 billion might be too high?
Yeah, I think that was one of the surprises this morning. I thought they'd probably raise the exports by 40 or 50 million on the 05-06 crop. I think there's sure some demand increases that could be put into the coming year's demand side of it. And as we talked about, we're not sure where we end up on the yield. But additional demand, I think that could lower the carryout numbers.
Kurt, I saw in one of the reports that the price range for corn was reduced by 10 cents on both ends to 215 to 255 a bushel. You think that's right?
Well, the lower end, with the way the trend is in the cash market wide basis, it wouldn't be surprising as we clean up this old crop and make room for new in through here. We could probably see some low cash bids going on this fall. But, you know, once everything finds a home this fall, then I think we can probably test the upper end. But, yeah, we're braced for some lower prices.
You're an elevator man. How's storage look?
Well, you know, I've heard quite a few people talking about storage. A lot of elevators are at least half full. We've still got a fair amount of corn on hand. I think that storage is going to be at a premium this year. Most guys are calling around checking on storage rates. Some storage rates are going up. So I think it's definitely going to be a hot topic. You know, you look at 22-cent carry in the market. That's as big a carry as we've seen going into the fall for a while. So a lot of guys are looking at, hey, you know, I need to find as much storage as I can. That way they have somewhere to go with it, especially if their elevator is still half full.
Hey, what do you know about on-ground storage and whether a farmer could pull that off by himself? Do you think it's possible?
Well, I guess it's possible, you know, and if he has to do it, he has to do it. But, you know, you've got to get it covered up. You've got to take care of it. I mean, it can go bad pretty quick. And, you know, while you're putting it on the ground, if you have rain, it's – I mean, we've ran into that with the elevator, putting corn on the ground. It seems like it's inevitable that it starts raining. We've talked about maybe doing that like the second week of July before because it always rains when we put corn on the ground. But, you know, it's just a – It's just a management thing, you know. It takes a little bit of work, a little bit of luck, and I think a guy could do it if he's willing to put the work into it.
Is there a silver lining into the downturn in the market called the LDP?
Well, I think that's a possibility. You've got, if I looked at it right this afternoon, Monday, if everything followed the market, we should have about a 17-cent LDP, you know, on cash corn if we had one right now. So we're, you know, up there close to that 20-cent mark that people talked about. I think we need to look at the report here a little bit and just put that into perspective, and that is that we really ended up with 165 million bushel more than what the trade was expecting on their guesses. You know, was that worth 14 cents lower in the market? I'm not sure. I think there are some technical things there. But I also think that one factor that was out there that maybe we haven't talked about is unleaded gas dropped about 32 cents from the high to the low this week. And I think that energy market, we are – becoming an energy producer, and I think that had something to do with where we end up here.
So would you agree with that, that did this drop today and for the week? I know that most of it happened for the today, but is it as much driven by the energy side as it is by the size of the corn crop?
Well, it could be to a small degree, but I think the biggest factor is you went below the 250 area. There was sell stops from 52, 50, 48, 47 all the way down. Published sell figures on the funds was about 25,000 contracts. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 50, 60,000 contracts sold by the funds today. I think they just puked out. They were long over. They were long. The moving average has been telling me short, and I think you saw a massive exit.
Once you got below that 248, you kind of got to a level where most everybody had a losing position, too, that was in there.
So down they went.
Yeah, I mean, most people say if you break 250, it gives more incentive not only for people to exit, but maybe, you know, possibly for new shorts just based upon technical factors.
So it's pretty typical, really, that the fundamentals are what got you breaking the support, and then once you broke those support levels, the technicals is what carried you on down the additional lower markets.
If you want to look at the raw fundamentals in today's numbers, there are several things. One is, as you mentioned, the extra bushels. That didn't justify that. I mean, that's a small percentage when you talk 11 billion bushels of corn. So you need to keep that in mind. But we got to remember, we're going to have some wide swings in through here as the funds push the market both up and down too far.
How soon will we have a harvest low?
I was planning on Labor Day weekend, but the way it moved off here, it might be sooner. That's the futures. Now, we've got two types of market. You got cash market,
sure,
and a futures market. We're sort of targeting Labor Day.
I think the real key there is when that user, if I'm sitting here and I'm a user, China, a processor, a feeder, when do I get satisfied that I want to go out there and start buying some corn? How long do I wait and how patient am I? I think that's really the key to where we hit the low. But I would agree with Kurt that I think you have an early low.
In both the cash and futures markets?
I think in both the cash and futures.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel on futures, on cash, it's kind of interesting. You know, who knows? I mean, it kind of depends on where you're at. You know, if you're in a place where they're not wanting the corn, I mean, you're probably not going to get much for it on the cash market.
Just a couple of other things that we gleaned from the reports that were released, the WASDE and the NAST reports, crop production today. Illinois average yield this year at 172, last year 143. Indiana 154 last year, 167 this year. Iowa 173 last year, and this year both Minnesota at 174 and 160 this year. So they dropped off. And Nebraska, that rounds up the top five producing states, 154 last year, 153 this year under fairly dry conditions, but I suppose they have a lot of it that happens to get water one way or the other. By the way, the top producing state is none of those in terms of yield per acre. Everybody knows where it is. Anybody know? Washington State, 205 bushels to the acre. It's all irrigated there. I think they only have a couple hundred thousand acres. I don't remember how many are there, but they raise some top-end corn while they're in Washington. What'd you see in today's numbers for the soybeans?
Well, that's probably the shocker, dropping it that low this quick. But they did go back and confirm better demand on the old crop, a raised crush 5 million bushels, raised exports, lower carry-in in this number. And then with the conditions the way they are, you know, with the higher yield in corn and lower yield in beans, was kind of a surprise. But we still got 450 million bushels projected, and that's still quite a few beans.
Soybeans finished the week like this. The August contract had a high of 573 and three quarters. They're low at $5.49. Settlement price down 26 and a half cents for the week at $5.51. The Noves at 568 and a quarter. We're off 28 and three quarters. The beans planted and harvested acre area are both the second highest on record. The U.S. season's average soybean price, 4.06-4.07, now projected between $5 and $6. That's actually unchanged from last month. The global oilseed production, 4.06-4.07, projected at 383.2 million tons. That is down 3.5 million tons from last month, and down 6.5 million tons from the 0506 projection. Reduced U.S. oilseed production accounts for most of the decline. It all seems like it should have set up more more friendly marketplace for the beans, yet they moved lower after the report. Was it just a fade?
Well, I think most people, whenever they saw that there was a 7 to 10 higher opening call, or 4 to 7 or whatever it was that you read, I think a lot of people thought, well, you know, sell the market on beans based upon several factors. Like Kurt said, 450 million carryouts, still pretty sizable. And then, like I said before, you look at the weather that we've had since they compiled the numbers, and I think it's pretty tough to get too bullish on beans, especially going into the harvest.
What do you do with beans? And are there a lot of them yet to come out? And how many of them been marketed at this point for old and new crop?
Well, unfortunately, I think there's more old crop out there than there should be. I don't know. It's a tough situation. I mean, our basis levels in our area up there are pretty wide, like around 55 to 60 under. It's hard to sell into that kind of a number. I think that if you can hold the beans or do something with them to find some kind of storage, I think that's probably your best bet at this point. But, you know, depending on your cash flow and everything, one strategy that we've looked at is maybe to go out there, sell some call options above, try to create some income to pay that storage and give you a chance to see if prices can go higher after harvest.
You know, most people had been thinking that ending stocks next year would be up around 700 million. It's not even close to that, according to USDA. Does that give you an opportunity, you think, to sell beans at a higher price next year?
Well, it sort of puts the market in position that maybe $4 is too low. It probably sets the benchmark. Maybe this 5.5 to 5.25 might be the lower end of the range. But you got to remember, we're still talking big numbers compared to past history, and we don't have the demand base in the beans like we do the corn.
Yeah, but the carryover was in July, 560 million. Some people thought it should go up to 700. She dropped to 450 million bushels for next year's.
Well, you got to go back a couple more years. You know, the old sparse group were talking 500 million, 600 million bushel carryouts a couple years ago. We never achieved it either.
What's happening in South America at this point? Are they going to be able to put beans in the ground, or are they going to want to put beans in the ground is, more, I guess, the more important question?
Everything that I look at and read, I hear that in the northern part of the country, the new frontier, that they're switching to some other crops. They're looking at reducing their bean acres. You're probably going to hold fairly steady, maybe a slight decline in acres in Brazil overall. But I sure think their decisions are being made right now, and I think it's going to be tough to get any kind of expansion in acres.
Bill, December corn went under $3 at the futures for next year for the 07 crop for the first time in a long time. Is that a bad sign?
Well, we were talking about that a little bit earlier here before the show. I guess in my mind, looking at trying to get expanded corn acres for next year, and that's really what we've got to do if our demand is where they say it's going to be. I think what the farmers bring in at harvest time is going to be more important. If they're bringing in $2 or less corn at harvest, I think it's going to be tough to expand acres next year. As far as the technicals, I don't think that was a huge area that we broke on the technical side of it.
Well, just with the last two things we've talked about, you know, you see anything from 5% to, I think, my biggest I've seen is 14.8% reduction in acreage in South America. You know, say we come in and we do reduce acreage a fair amount, then I think that gives us an even better floor under the bean market. There's been a lot of talk about maybe some expanded wheat acreage because there were some decent income levels this year where there was wheat. You know, we may have a struggle for acreage next spring. So, you know, I don't know. I agree with Bill. We're going to have to keep really the corn complex supported somewhat, or farmers are going to be really discouraged to go out there and spend a pretty decent amount of money to put corn on corn out there. You know, you're talking, like we talked earlier, maybe $200 an acre to put out a corn, you know, corn on corn on your input costs. And that's expensive to do if you're coming in at harvest time with $1.90 corn or $2 corn.
Speaking of expanded wheat acreage, the area harvested for wheat at 31.1 million acres, unchanged from last month, but down 8% from a year ago. The U.S., that's for winter wheat. The U.S. yield forecast at 41.2 bushels the acre. That's just up 0.1 bushel from the July 1 estimate. You think farmers ought to put wheat in the ground in central Illinois, northern Illinois, along with the southern parts of Indiana and other places that are more normal for planting soft red winter wheat?
It's slowly expanded that way. It depends on the price of corn this winter. You know, if they can get the sniff of some high $2 corn, I think there'll be a couple stick of corn. But the bread and butter is wheat followed by beans in the south, and I think you're going to see that trend fairly.
Well, I mean here in your area, are farmers thinking that if they get corn out early enough or that they'll drop wheat acres in? And somebody suggested to go ahead and plant it. I think it was Brian Maple last week suggested, I'll put it in the ground and rip it up in the springtime if the price of corn is high enough.
Hmm. Well, go ahead, Bill.
I guess one thing I'd say is if you're going to make your decisions based on the price of next July wheat, I think you need to lock some things in when you go ahead and plant that wheat. That's one key to it, I think, if you're going to do it.
There's been a lot of guys in the past 10, 15 years that have gotten away from wheat that are considering maybe putting a little bit of wheat out next year. But, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of these guys they'll talk about maybe putting some wheat out, but I don't see in my area probably many more wheat acres. There might be a few with the guys that are already planting wheat, but I don't see the guys that have gotten away from it going back to it.
A quick look at the Mercantile Exchange. August live cattle, a high this week, $89 even, the low at 85 even. Settlement price at 88.80. They were up 397.5 from last week. The feeders at 117.35 for the AUG contract at 222.5 higher. Lean hogs August contract 72.10 on the high, the low at 69.95. Lean hogs settled at 71.82.5. They were up $1.85 for the week, and the August bellies at 74.05 were off $5.10. One quick question, Kurt. In Japan, they finally got a shipment of beef and they ate it all in a day.
That was huge. Yeah, it was huge, especially Japan coming out and said they found the 28th case of mad cow, their local in their own country there, and I think that got into the marketplace, and that opens the door for more beef, U.S. beef to Japan.
Thanks much. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Steve Wyatt of USDA NASS.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. While most of Illinois was spared the hot weather that characterized the end of July, humid air kept things somewhat uncomfortable this week. The humid air also provided the ingredients for some heavy rain across parts of the state. Temperatures this week ranged from a degree above normal in the northern half of Illinois to 5 degrees above normal in the southwestern sections of the state. A weak cold front pushed through the northern two-thirds of the state before stalling out this week. That is why temperatures were more moderate except in the far south. And while afternoon high temperatures were close to normal, it was the overnight temperatures that remained well above normal in the humid air. A stalled front, warm, humid air, and upper-level disturbances moving through the Midwest all combined to produce some heavy rain in Illinois this week. On Tuesday, training thunderstorms dumped 3 to 7 inches of rain on Clay County in a 4 to 6-hour period, with 7.5 inches reported near Flora. On Thursday, a convective system moved through northern Illinois, dropping as much as 3 inches of rain in places. Most of Illinois received rain this week, and in most areas, rainfall the week was well above normal. High pressure will bring a cooler and less humid weekend to much of Illinois. Another cold front will likely push through the state on Monday, bringing another round of showers and thunderstorms. High pressure over the Great Lakes should produce some pleasant summer weather the remainder of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Kurt Campbell of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing from Lexington, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain down in Windsor, Illinois. Our guest today is Stephen Wyatt. He's the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
Welcome, Todd. Good to be with you.
We know USDA uses farmer estimates and some actual crop counts when making the August production estimate, and that these are given subjective weights each year. Those change. Were there significant differences anywhere between the actual counts and what farmers were reporting in their fields?
Well, we don't go back and at this point in time and match up because our samples are drawn separately. We go out to about 30,000 farmers and ask them what they expect their yields to be. And then additionally, we go out to, like on corn, we go out to something over 1,000 samples in August. And they're independent of the samples that we contact for farmer-reported yields. So we don't match those up now. Now, at the end of the season where we have our objective measurement, we will ask the farmer, you know, actually what he produced on that field where that sample was. So we can use that for our history and look at our improving our models.
Well, did you change the way you weight those two different categories this
year?
No,
and there's no specific weight on that. We look at both indicators on yield and production, and we look at it over history and time, and each state independently does their work on their state yields and production. They send them in. We look at it from the national perspective, and when we're looking at both indicators, like I say, we look at the historical biases. We look at we don't use weather data and vegetative index maps and things necessarily to set numbers, but we use it to help analyze our numbers. And so there's some subjectivity in that at setting that corn and soybean estimate.
Did you conjecture on why Iowa managed to out-yield Illinois this year?
Well, a little bit. It's still early in the season. What's going to happen by harvest is still unknown. If you can tell us what the weather is going to do between now and then and diseases, then we could probably do a better job. If you look at eastern Iowa last year, that was pretty dry, like western Illinois and down into Missouri for that drought. And if you look at the vegetative index maps, they're showing a lot of green in there compared to a year ago. So Iowa's crop is still determined, we think, still going to be pretty good. But is it going to, the western Iowa going to have some of the problems that we're seeing up in the Dakotas with some severe drought? And that's to be seen yet.
Well, Steve, you talk about collecting samples. Could you go in a little bit more detail what's involved in that sample, what type of counts are involved?
On the objective measurement?
Right.
Well, we go out to the fields. We count, we measure row spaces. We have plant counts. We count on corn. We count the number of shoots. And then as the crop matures, we count ears. We get kernel row lengths. We get ear circumferences. And then at another maturity level, we will shuck some corn from those samples and get the grain weights. And then harvest, we go back and do a gleaning on a fourth of our samples to get a harvest loss indication.
So I noticed in some of the western states, especially South Dakota and Nebraska, the ear counts or population counts were higher than last year. Are those, at this point in time, August 1st, are those actually ear counts or are those plant populations?
Well, at this point, most of those are ear counts. If you look at corn, and one of the things I put in the presentation to the Secretary this morning was for 2006, our ear counts per acre was the second largest in history behind the 2004 crop.
You know, we were talking earlier in the show about maybe the ear weight. I've seen some of our land, particularly on our marginal ground, you know, the ears there. You talked about maybe circumference a little bit, but I guess my thinking is that in the rougher areas that, you know, the weight's probably not going to be there. The ear size might be there. And I guess I just don't feel like we've got kernel depth in areas, you know, where there is marginal ground because of the extreme heat of this year. And I guess I was just surprised in some of the areas that had some rough weather scenarios that they held up maybe as good as what they did. But conversely, I guess I feel like maybe in some of the good areas it could end up a little bit better as well. So I guess I'm just wondering how much, you know, like if you look at the weight of the ear or just the circumference, and then you said you look at some test weights or?
Yeah, we will shell some corn and we'll weigh it, and that'll give us our grain weight that goes into our models. Now, keep in mind, August, we have very little, if any, lab data on corn. What goes into the model in August as far as those measurements would be five-year averages, because most of the samples, I look back, and most of our samples, particularly in Illinois, Iowa, and Indiana, were in the blister or pre-blister stage, so there's nothing into the dent or even the milk or dough stage at the time we, you know, worked the samples. And that was, we started the last week of July, and then went through the early part of August to work those samples.
Stephen, we appreciate you taking time with us today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Wyatt is the director of the Stats Division at USDA NAS. Now a final word from our panelist, and we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
I guess my points that I'd like to get across today are, if you have a situation where you don't have to do anything from a cash sale standpoint, I would say just stay away from it right now. If you do have to make cash sales, get with somebody and see if there's some innovative ways to come up with some ideas.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Matt Bennett is Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois.
I agree with Bill. I think guys are going to have to be patient. Don't throw in the towel on one day and on one month's report.
And Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing.
Peanut production is down over 32%. I'd be long peanuts.
Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us. Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this week's program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids. Funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.